All right, good evening, everybody. Tonight, we have a really cool speaker for you. I have known her since I very first got sober. She may have even been at one of the first meetings I was at 5 years ago when I came in. And real excited to hear her story. I've never actually heard the whole thing, so I'm super excited. She has 16 years of sobriety. She's from Visalia. Her home group is the Monday night Alano Club Women's Meeting. And let's see, she's been really working on lately, just trying to get back to normal with all what's going on in the world today, and it's just at the forefront of her mind. So everybody, please welcome Pat T.
Hi, my name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 2nd, 2005. It was not a New Year's resolution, but it was a God-given date, that's for sure. And it was this time of the year, really 17 years ago, where this, you know, I'm doing the Christmas shopping thing and drinking, and I'm shopping, pretending to shop so I could go drink. You know, go to the bar with all my shopping bags, and I'd buy things I didn't even need. It's crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. My mom is full-blooded Native American. She had two kids, my brother and I. She was an alcoholic. I found out later because she left when I was five. And my dad raised me and my brother. He remarried. They had five more kids. When I was 30, I met her. And it was in a park in her hometown. It was just by chance I found her. I didn't think I was going to find her this day. But drinking, she had a big bottle of vodka in front of her. You know, and it kind of was reality of this, the alcoholism. My dad used to tell me that there was this family had a lot of drinking. So kind of came to light that this was real. I wasn't drinking heavily at that time. It was during my first marriage. And that was, of course, 1987. That marriage ended. Just briefly. Then I remarried. When that ended is when my drinking started. Heavily. And that was like in 2000. Drinking a lot. Like, I'm gonna relive my youth now. You know, I'm single. I'm... Woman, hear me roar. I'm gonna live life. I don't need a man. But, you know, I didn't know how to live life. You know, I just didn't have any direction. I didn't ask for direction. And I just did what I thought I needed to do. And I thought I'm gonna drink and go meet guys at the bar. You know, right? How am I gonna meet them? I don't know how to meet or look at you face to face or meet anybody without a drink. I needed that. I needed to calm the nerves or get the courage or whatever. But what I really didn't realize is that once I started to drink, I didn't know how to stop. So I became just that. The intentions were good, and then the end result was I'm just a drunk, you know. And in 2003, I got my first DUI. And I could describe it back then that it was devastating. And I couldn't even, the words were embarrassing, devastating, and humiliating. I was passed out in a blackout on the side of the road, out in the country. I had apparently gone home after work, went to a bar, went home, changed my clothes, went back out. I don't remember any of that. I don't remember any of that. And it was just appalling to me that I don't remember any of that. So, you know, of course, I got to go to the classes, and I had to pay these court fines, and I just represented myself. I just, no contest, and I just had to do this six-month program at Alternative Services and 12 AA meetings and a court card, and I'm not doing this again. You know, I got this behind me, paid my fines. You know, I'm going to do this differently. And that was in April of 2003. In July of 2003, my brother OD'd. He was, to me, the alcoholic. He was the bum drinking booze out of a brown paper bag and living on the streets. And I knew I wasn't like him. And when he died, it was really sad, and at the same time, there was relief that I didn't have to worry about where he was anymore. Kind of backpedaling a little bit. My mom died in 1996. She was 56 years old. She died alcoholically. So I got two people in my life now, and now here I am in this position of this drinking problem, which I thought wasn't a problem. So I did change. I changed where I drank. I changed what I drank. I changed. I would drink and not leave my drink alone, and I drank at different bars. Instead of drinking at the Pump House and Searcy or the Patio, in those places, I started going to Applebee's and Red Robin and Amigos. And, you know, I moved it up a notch. And two things I remember about doing AA on the court card was, one of them was, I heard somebody say, the people at the bar are not your friend. The bartender's not your friend. They don't know who you are. They're just serving drinks to whoever's going to take a drink. But so then, you know, got my court card out of the way, and I'm going back to the bars. But when I walked into the bar, they knew my name, and they knew what I wanted to drink. So it was like, I'm somebody. You know, my beer's waiting for me at the bar. So that was kind of in my head, proving them wrong, proving AA wrong, or the people that was, you know, saying things about. I didn't have friends at the bar. They weren't your friends. I got my classes out of the way, got my court fines paid. It's Christmas time, and it was just right after Christmas. Well, it was in October. I don't think this back it up a month. In October, there was a year-end party for work, and I'm on probation from that first BYU. But I decide that at this year-end meeting, I'm going to have this big ice chest full of beer and whatnot in my trunk, and we're going up to Tenaya Lodge, and it's snowing. It was early snow that season. It was Halloween weekend, and we stop in Oakhurst, and we start drinking, me and my friends. And we get in the car to go because the roads are clear now. So we start driving, and I get out because we have to put chains on. So I get out, and I put the chains on my car. Well, the chains don't fit my tires because I forgot that I have wider tires on the back end, but I put them on the best I could because I know how to put on chains, I thought. Well, they didn't stay on, and they got caught in the axle, and I started to roll back in the snow like I was going backwards and sliding off. Like, I knew I wasn't going to slide off because I'm not going nowhere. Well, the highway patrol came up, and he helped me. He helped me get going, and then he goes, I'll follow you. So he followed me all the way to that lodge, and I got there safely without getting in trouble. Because I had been drinking. I had a trunk full of booze in my car. I'm wet, muddy, my hair's dripping, and I go wheeling into the Tenaya Lodge with my ice chest, which is a really nice hotel, but I didn't care because I couldn't wait to get to my room and open up that ice chest and just start drinking. That weekend was kind of a mess. I lost my car keys in the snow, had my car towed anyway down the next couple days later, and then I got the next work day, I got an email. Oh no, I got a letter in the mail that said, your behavior was unacceptable at the year end. Blah, blah, blah. Before I could finish the letter, I had turned around and shredded it. And it was like, bleh. And before it was already done going, bleh. I'm thinking, wait. I wanted to read it again so I could really be mad at it. Because I thought, I was mad. Like, we were having fun. Like, this is not, I wasn't, my behavior wasn't unacceptable at this party, you know. Though, when you think back on it, it was kind of an acceptable experience, you know. But long story short, that was October. By December, you know, I'm drinking my normal, same thing, shopping, going out, drinking. And I go, and this is my MO, was go drink and go home whenever. And this one particular day, you know, and I was kind of getting tired, like, okay, this, you know, once I drink, I can't stop, so I'm just going to go out and drink. So this one day I go home, and I said, I'm not going to go out tonight. I'm going to just go home, stay inside. I'm telling myself this. Talking to myself and then not going out. How many times have I done this? I go to the grocery store, buy a bunch of groceries, and this is, do I go that way to Applebee's or do I go that way and go home? I'm fighting with myself in my head. Applebee's, home. Applebee's won. So I go to Applebee's. I get, I don't know, you know, they have the tall glasses. So I had like two or three tall glasses. Somebody says, try this shot. Then I have a short one. Then I go home, I change my clothes, and I go out. Because now it's like, you know, the energy to go out, and I got to have more business. Well, that was the night same thing. I just leave the bar whenever my mind tells me to leave, and I just go to the car, and my car's the only one on the road, and I get in the car, I drive through McDonald's at Demery and Mineral King. I don't remember going to McDonald's. I only know that because I had McDonald's in my hand when the lights went on behind me. And I went, oh my God, like, pull over. I don't say much because I'm really sick. Like thinking, oh my God, this has happened again. And I thought I would never do this again. And how did I get my... Everything's coming flashing back to me. Like, I didn't even want to come out. I kept fighting with myself to not go out, you know. So anyways, I pull over and I get out of the car. And he gets my license and he goes back and he comes back and he says, you have a drinking problem? And I'm just standing there just dumbfounded and I just can't say anything. Because not only am I just drunk, but I'm like, I can't believe I'm in this position again, and I know I'm in a lot of trouble, and I'm worried about work. He goes, I'm the one who arrested you the first time. And that was like a sting and an embarrassment beyond. I thought, I'm really in trouble, you know, but it was his words that he said, you have a drinking problem. No one ever told me or asked me if I had a drinking problem. I knew I had a drinking problem. You know, I knew it in here. And I also knew my family had a drinking problem. That was all kind of come together. You know, I get booked. You know, I try to look good for the picture. You know, I didn't want to look drunk. I didn't want to appear because I'm kind of coming to, like, I had drank a lot. And I get booked. My son comes, picks me up the next morning, and we go get my car, and there's the McDonald's food, and we go home, I change my clothes, and I go to work, you know, and I'm not going to miss work. I'm going to go to work, and I'm not feeling good, and I'm probably still buzzed, but, you know, my purse was still in the car. They didn't even take that. Everything was still in the car. The car was unlocked, and I just kind of felt lucky that everything was still there. Not like the first time they towed it in the tow yard, and like, that was a hassle getting it out. I was afraid that it was going to be in the tow yard, but it wasn't, so I went to work, and then that was just, you know, like the 27th or 28th of December, and New Year's came. I went to Blockbuster. Remember Blockbuster? But the Blockbuster rented about 10 movies. And I'm going to just sit there and watch movies all night. Because I was just kind of bummed about the whole thing that just happened. But my son, my young son, he's, what, 20 years old at the time? I don't know how old he was. And he goes, the one that was living with me, he goes, Mom, just don't drink and drive, you know, because he could tell I'd be depressed, and I don't really want to stay home and watch movies. And do they think, you know, I'm going to go out and have fun? He goes, just don't drink and drive. Get a taxi, whatever, you know. So I go out. It was like my permission to go out. You know, someone said, just don't drink and drive. But I went out and I drank and I drove. Thank God I didn't get in trouble. I just got home. I was fine. But the depression set in. And that's why January 2nd was my first day not drinking, because I made that decision that day. I didn't want to drink anymore. And I was crying and at home by myself, depressed. And I called DAP, and the man on the phone said, I'm an alcoholic. Don't hang up the phone. He goes, do 90 meetings in 90 days. Because I'm crying. I'm telling him, you know, my whole mini story. And so he got me some outside counseling. And, you know, I remember that stuff, 90 meetings in 90 days. And I knew about AA because I had been here on the court card. And I went to outside counseling, and I told her my story in a general way. And she goes, you don't have to drink every day to be an alcoholic. I didn't say anything about being an alcoholic, but, you know, she just heard my story. She goes, you don't have to drink every day to be an alcoholic, and that stuck with me. I didn't drink every single day, but when I drank, I didn't know how to stop. And I was really serious about not drinking anymore, you know, and so it was probably like the 5th or 7th of January that I went to a meeting that I knew some of the meetings where they were by remembering where I had been just the year before. And I went to the Blue Room at the hospital when they had it back then. It was a Sunday night. And there was a girl at the table. And I had got there early when I thought I was kind of being a little late. And that was God. And she just said, come and sit. You know, she just saw, because I was sitting by the door. Whoever's sitting there by the door watching me. I was sitting by the door because I thought I'm just ready to jam out of here as soon as it was over. But I was willing to go in and listen. I don't remember anything anybody said that night, except the only thing I remembered was her going, come and sit by me. And I knew if I didn't go sit by her, I wasn't going to do this. You know, and I just went and I sat by her. She had a little son with her. It was an open meeting. And that was the beginning of being willing to take a suggestion. She gave me a meeting list. She circled the meetings that she went to. And this is how it starts. And I just went to those meetings that she went to, and I would see her. And some of you know Tina. She lives in Paso Robles now. And she helps a lot of women. And she's just a fine example of a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we've been friends ever since. And that's what I did was I heard 90 meetings in 90 days. And then I started going to these meetings that she was going to. So I would meet her friends and meet, you know, people and hear. But I noticed, you know, plus it was a lot of meetings because it was Tulare meetings, I started meetings, and she went to a lot of different meetings. So I just went to those meetings. And I did probably, I can't say I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I probably did like between 88 to 89 meetings in 90 days. I did a lot of meetings. And if I missed a day, I went to 2 meetings or 3 meetings, whatever it took to get caught up on those meetings. Because it was important to me to try to do what people were suggesting for me to do if I was to have a chance. And I was hearing my story. So as I was hearing my story or hearing suggestions, someone suggested take a notebook and write down things that you relate to, or things that you could take with you, you know. It was a while, but I went to the Alano Club a lot in the morning because I'd go before I'd go to work. But there was a few things I heard when I was new. Get a sponsor. I was about 3 months sober before I got a sponsor, but I heard get a sponsor. You know, read the first 164 pages, and I had a big book, so I started reading the big book. But I remember when I first kind of stood up and raised my hand and said, my name's Pat, I'm an alcoholic, and it was such a big relief to actually say it out loud. You know, it was a big deal, and it is a big deal, and welcome to the newcomer. Because I heard in another meeting someone said, when it goes from your head to your heart, because I knew I had a problem, but it was here now. But that was the grace of God. When it goes from here to here, you know. That's a gift. You get the chance. And I felt like I was getting a chance to start over. That's all I wanted, was to start over. And I was willing for someone to tell me what to do next, because I didn't have any direction in life. I didn't have a mom. I had a stepmom. If anybody's had a stepmom, that maybe not a good one. You know, I had a stepmom that didn't have the mom gene. And even her children, as she grew up, they still struggle with that. But that's okay today. Then it was not okay to me. It was like, how come I'm treated differently? You know, all that stuff. But this program's helped me get through that. When I started reading the big book, what also stuck out to me was the design for living that works. And that's what I wanted, was a design for living. I wanted some direction on how to live life. And I needed to know how to live it without alcohol. And this is what, I was amazed. Less than 30 days sober, I went to a convention, and I actually had a good time. But I was amazed that there was 1,500 people at the banquet. These were, I'm going to say for the most part, 90% of them were sober, and probably the other 10% were the Al-Anons. So I can't say they were all sober, but that's a lot of people to me in one room having fun. I was impressed. I was like going, wow, I didn't feel like I was with a bunch of people like my brother who lived on the street drinking booze out of a brown paper bag. That's not what it is. It's like we all suffer from the same disease, you know. And so I got to hear the speaker that night. It was Sister Maurice from the Bronx. She's a nun. She had an amazing story. And the thing that I remember most was her father was an alcoholic and he died alcoholically. But she knows he was sober in heaven. And I think that was the thing that was comforting to me, that I knew my mom was sober in heaven. Like, I know she's sober. She had a really, really funny story too, just being a nun, because nobody thought she was an alcoholic. And kind of reminded me of when I got my attorney. He goes, you don't look like an alcoholic. Or when I was still drinking and I went to the Green Olive and I walked into the bar right after work and he goes, you don't look like you belong here. So I didn't look like a drunk and I didn't look like an alcoholic. But so that was like really an amazing, you know, it was like participating. If there was an event, I went to the event. If there was, I went to a spiritual retreat that year. I went to Hawaii that year. I just did whatever I could to participate in my own sobriety. I got the sponsor. You know, it's the same thing. It's like we sat and met. Are you willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober? We picked it, and I was. And let's pick a day and time that we both agree on to meet every week. And that's what we did. And I was really serious about, I don't want to do anything wrong. I don't want to go back to work, you know. Maybe a little too, I was rigid. I was hard on myself. And I probably didn't have to be, even though I was. It was even given, somebody gave me it was a number off one of the banquet tables. It was the number 62, and it was given. And I had to go figure out what that meant. And it was about rule 62, and it's like, don't be so damn serious. You know, but I was serious for me, and I realized that I could still laugh at, I can laugh now, like, how I got here. But even today, it's like I'm so grateful for what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I was, I got through the steps in my first year, and then year two came, and I tried dating, and that didn't go very well. But it was the experience, and it was the being honest, and it was paying attention. I learned that keep my expectations low and my acceptance level high. My friends were always there, because after my first little dating spout, this guy broke up with me on the phone. I was devastated. I'm serious about this devastation. Like, I wanted a drink because it was matters of the heart. And it broke my heart that somebody would do that. Like, who does that? And I feel really lucky that I decided to call my sponsor, and I called two other friends and just spilled my guts. And by the time it was all done with, you know, my assignment was to write every day till the pain went away. And it took 3 weeks of writing every day, whether it was big black marker, mad, or whatever I wanted to write. I'm telling you what, that writing really revealed a lot. One of them was I wasn't ready. I still didn't like myself. And so it was those little lessons, you know, doing what's suggested and helping others, being of service. I got a service commitment at 6 months, and it was Saturday night at 8 o'clock in Tulare, and I actually liked it because I thought this is where I would normally be Saturday night at 8 o'clock is the bars, you know, and I needed to be in an AA meeting, and I loved it. I actually grew to love it. I was nervous about it, but it was the best thing that I ever did. I had to get a new sponsor, and it took me a few years to get a new sponsor because I kind of stalled about it, but I had some good roots in between that time. In 2009, my son had a bipolar episode, and we didn't know what it was at the time. And it was really horrible. And he ended up in 3B in Bakersfield. But I was really fearful about what was happening to him because we didn't know at the time. And it was so fearful that I was praying for God to fix him, for God to heal him, to make him well, for this to, you know, and praying hard, like I was crying and on my knees, and I felt the fear coming in, and it was so strong that it was, I felt it coming, actually, I could see it actually coming through the window. That's how strong it was. So anybody who's had that kind of fear. And then, because it was so fearful, I started to pray that fear away. Like, my mind went towards, like, you know, I wanted the fear to go away now because it was overwhelming me. My next thought while I was praying was that I started thanking God. Because I knew this was out of my control. And I thanked God for whatever he had in store. And as I started praying that prayer, the fear went away. And it just, like, I watched it go out the window, and people think I'm crazy, but I watched it actually fear go out the window. I knew right then that that was the answer to anything I go through, to thank God for that, whatever, good or bad, evil, not evil, whatever it is, that I've learned to thank God. I don't have any control over the result, you know, do the serenity prayer. Is it in? Can I do something about it or not? And that's always been my prayer, my just my go-to. That was my first real strong experience with God. You know, I mean, getting sober, that's a miracle. This, thanking God in any kind of situation, you know, that was like the next miracle. And it was a few years later that my son got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to, you know, watch that whole, another, you know, if you have anybody in your life that's struggling or you don't know what to do, and like the reading tonight, you know, you can't preach to them, you can't. So I didn't do that. I didn't preach to him. The first thing I said was, you need to find a sponsor, you know, and just kind of let him go. Learning to let go of control. I'm not God. And I just have a God in my life that I trust to take care of. You know, it's hard. I can't say it's easy. It's really, really hard because it happened again. Just in November, the result was good because I had to, I was able to handle it better. And now we both have a lot, you know, it's funny because he ended up in the hospital and his blood was clean. He didn't drink. You know, I mean, he was really surprising, even the other people that, you know, but he, a lot of things happened with that. But, you know, it was that really remembering at the moment, like even as hard as it was remembering to trust that God's will. Remembering that it's God's will, whatever happens, to thank him and move on. So this is, you know, is thanking God. Maybe that's the message, is thank God. I mean, times are tough and life happens. And no one said it's easy. No one said it was easy. They said it's a simple program. And, you know, it's that design for living that works. And, you know, it says it twice. The other place it says it's a design for living that works in rough going. And that's the key. It's a design for living in rough going because life gets rough and you don't know what to do. And is this going to end or life's going to get better? But I remember to thank God. I have everything I need. I might not have everything I want. I can't even think of things I don't have that I want. You know, life's good today. Even in the hard times. It was funny because I gravitated to that design for living that works. And when I went to this convention that I went to when I was 30 days sober, I go to that convention every year and I haven't missed it except for the COVID year. So the second year I go, and the theme of the convention was a design for living. And I've had seen a lot of good speakers. You know, I had people just, even in my early sobriety, is listening to lots and lots of speaker tapes. And I know we have Zoom now, and I don't know how, you know, even speaker tapes on apps. That's always like a great go-to because I have a lot of favorite speakers. One of my favorite speakers, he's gone now, but his name is Sandy Beach. And one of Sandy Beach's, we have it on our refrigerator, a quote, and it says, the goal is to be the least disturbed person in the room. And it's like, that's a really good motto, you know, to live by, because we live in a society with all different kinds of opinions and beliefs. So when you come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, hopefully we're hearing the message of, you know, how to stay sober, how to get help, what to do next. Trying to think of...
Seven or eight minutes left for take questions.
Oh, I'm going to end it there because I kind of lost my train of thought. And any questions?
Actually, I'm alcoholic. Yeah. What would you say would be the beginning of recovery, what your step was challenging or
overcome? So, I was the A student that sat in the front row, and it was really important to me that to do these steps, you know, my sponsor would give me that assignment, let's read the step, go over the step, write about the step, what it means to you, and then talk about it. And I honestly, I felt a change in every step. Whatever that step was, I felt the change spiritually what that step meant. You know, and then I felt really comfortable about moving on to the next step. When I got to the fourth step, which is seems like the difficult step, talk about wanting to be thorough. My sponsor at that time, she's not here tonight, but she'll tell you it was the longest fifth step she ever did. It's the same thing. I didn't want to miss anything. And even though you do the best you can, because you can always go over it again later. I told her every single little thing from the time I could remember till that time to that point. I didn't want him to miss out. But that's the way it was. You know, there was no wrong thing about it. You know, after it was all done, like the book says, you take a nap or rest or, you know, it just, you know, just kind of gave ease with it. And then that was probably the hardest. The next hardest was, of course, amends. And the easiest amends and the hardest amends was my kids. They were so forgiving because I felt like I hurt them the most. And because they've seen their mother not act like a mom. You know, it's like acting like a kid or acting like just behavior, you know, the unacceptable, irresponsible, despicable behavior. And, but they're very forgiving. And even to this day, you know, I have them in my life. I never really lost them ever. And, it wasn't even until I was maybe 8 years sober, I finally told my dad. We went to a Giants game. Now I'm gonna cry. And I told him I had gotten arrested a couple times, and that I had a drinking problem, but I wasn't drinking anymore. The reason why I'm crying because he passed away in January. I got to be there. Right, you hear those stories where you get to be there, and I got to be present, and I get to watch it pass to the other side. And I wouldn't have, and I got to do it sober, and I got to do it aware, and I got to make my amends to him, you know, for whatever. I didn't really do anything, you know. I was his favorite. And he always told me that, you're my number one daughter. Because I was. I was a firstborn. But I think he always made sure I was taken care of and nurtured because of the stepmom who wasn't nurturing. So he always made sure that I was nurtured and he was a good dad. But my men's list was pretty easy. So worth it. If you're going through your steps, don't stall. One, get done with it. Two, move. Keep going. Because I'm going to tell you what, those 9-step promises, I go to the Alana Club and I read those on the wall. That's what I wanted. I wanted those promises. And I can tell you I have those promises today in my life. I was 3 years sober. I was able to buy a home, you know, but that's because the market went. The houses were cheap. And I'm like, oh my God, right, perfect timing for me. You know, was that, that's just, that was just, again, you know, I got sober at the right time, or it was just timing. And today every day I get up and I spend some quiet time, I read the daily reflections. I love the daily reflections. I read that over and over and over every year after year after year, and I'll read another book along with it. But the daily reflections is an AA approved book, and I love that book. And just sit in quiet in meditation. You know, I believe in prayer and meditation. Prayer is making my request known to God, and meditation is being quiet and listening for the answer. You know, if I can just sit and be still. And I've learned a lot just from that. Even in the beginning was, I heard God, and, you know, it's like, oh, I've made so many promises to God. But it didn't keep me from not coming back. But I learned a lot about spirituality and finding a God in my understanding through some outside help. And I read this book called The Power of Now, and it really helped me get over my fear of God and stay present and being, you know, staying in now. It's like, it's just, who do I have? I just have this moment. I don't have, a minute ago is gone, and a minute from now is not here yet. And everything's good right now. You know, and if you think about it, if you just stay present, it's all really good right now. So stuff gets a little crazy. I just have to bring myself to the back to the present moment. And if I go back to the present moment by using prayer and meditation, I can use the breathing. Sometimes it's just that breathing. I can get myself, you know, riled up, worried, and it's just some little tools for getting myself back to being. Welcome to all the newcomers and everyone that took chips. And as I heard the number, you know, cry again. Just the amount of sobriety, you know, it's not hard to remember what it's like to have just a few days. And we were even talking about it earlier. It's like you can get 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and that's really easy. And then you got to wait for 6 months, and then you got to wait for the 9 months, and then you get your year, and then you got to wait another whole year to get another year. And that's okay. It's like that's just how it works. I remember getting my 4-year chip in Las Vegas. There wasn't too many meetings that did all the months here, and I was so excited to get 4 months here. You know, it's like, I don't want to wait till 6 months from 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Like, so I was really, like, really happy about that. But we just give back what was given to us freely, you know, and if you're not having fun, then you're not participating. There's a lot of fun in sobriety, and I wouldn't stay if it wasn't fun. I have the best friends in the whole wide world. They're family. You're all family. And I hope that you stay and don't leave before the miracle happens. And I'm grateful for everyone in my life. Moses came up just for me. And that's it. That's all I got. Thank you.